welcome to the Tree Planners podcast. It is October 9th, and we have Margaret joining us as usual. I'm Adam, and we also have Laura Bowman from EcoJustice joining us. Hello.
Hi.
Oh, I should shut down my mail system, my mail app here, so I stop getting those interruptions. Done. And how are you doing this morning, Laura?
I'm doing pretty good.
We're all kind of chuckling a little bit because this is our second take. We were full on well into this episode and realized we'd forgotten to hit the record button. So I'm asking Laura again how she's doing. And that's a little bit of a weird position to put her in, but how are you doing? It's been 10 minutes. Maybe you're doing differently.
I'm still doing pretty well. We've definitely had a crazy few months with all of the changes coming through from the provincial government. Lots of fast tracking highways and growth, as well as a lot of municipal attacks on the Greenbelt most recently. Yesterday, with York Region's council meeting. But I'm still feeling good. I think we're going to keep fighting this. We're putting a lot of resources behind this fight, and so are a lot of other organizations. And we're going to stop these kind of sprawl creating pieces of infrastructure like wastewater and highways from happening.
Mm-hmm. I think that just to touch briefly on the York Region thing, do you want to just give the top notes of what they're doing or hoping to do?
Sure. Well, York Region Council has been asking for a long time to remove quite a large amount of greenbelt lands along 400 series highways and open those up for quote unquote employment uses. Although we know that the vast majority of so-called employment lands end up being used for either land speculation or residential sprawl rather than job creation. So they're pushing once again to ask the province, I guess they think this is their opening with the current government, to remove lands from the Greenbelt. Really, really disappointing move once again by York Region Council. Really shows a lack of commitment to protecting the Greenbelt. And it also demonstrates how these highways threaten the Greenbelt and threaten our protected lands when they get approved. Because as soon as they get approved, then the pressure on all the lands around them dramatically increases. And, cases will be made that, well, now there's a highway through the middle of it, so it's not really good quality protected area anymore. Last night we heard Mayor of Stouffville say things like, well, no one wants to farm next to the highway anymore. I think it's a good case study in why we need to fight highways, because they bring with them a whole suite of land speculators who hope to profit on the lands adjacent to the highway by having them taken out of Greenbelt designation.
Mm-hmm. And for me, I think it's a great example of induced demand as well. It works here because there's a highway, so there's an ease of access. So why not? It just makes sense to open up these lands. Okay, fine. You put some employment in there. Now what are you looking at? All right, you've got jobs. Oh, well, people need a place to live, so we've got to take this piece out here and this piece out here. We need infrastructure to service these employment lands, more roads, more capacity, all this sort of thing, and build it, and they will come pretty much. Yeah, this is the exact same rationale is being made for a proposal for development on the outskirts of Barrie here, just outside of the urban boundary, McLean Park. The proponent, well, the owner of the land anyways, he's been complaining. It's not really a viable farm any longer because the city is right across the road here. And, there's people always coming across over here and messing around and mucking about on our farm, and we're not really able to do things the way we used to be able to do and all this sort of thing. So why not turn it into residential land? I mean, the same argument can be held for the outskirts of urban areas all over the place. And what are you left with then? Where do you draw the line?
Yeah. And the proponents of this type of thing, they try and spin it as, you know, at York Region's council meeting, I was hearing the mayor of Stouffville try and cast this as, oh, well, it's just a site-specific change, you know, it's not open season on the Greenbelt. But the whole reason we have the Greenbelt is because it requires wholesale protection and integrity as one piece, because otherwise it becomes death by a thousand cuts, mm-hmm. right? I mean, it's just not credible to say that you're just opening up one little piece here or one little piece there. By setting the precedent of opening it up, it is open season on those protections. And I just, I found those comments really demonstrate a lack of understanding of the purpose of green protections in the first place. They're really disappointing. And I think that it's clear that there's leadership in the GTA that doesn't understand the green belt, like at a fundamental level.
Mm-hmm. And the one thing too, I would say a couple of things I'm thinking. One is that the green belt is an example of proactive policy, you know, trying to avoid problems before they begin. And I don't know if, in general, if government's really good at proactive policy. They're very good at like, okay, we're going to get this started and then we're going to put things in place that once it started, it gets better. Like we try not to do damage, but once we've already got the process started. So people have been saying to me, you know, how do we stop these applications? How do we stop aggregate? And I'm like, man, is it ever tough? Once the process gets started, once the application gets put forward and you start talking about the Planning Act or whatever, to actually get back to, no, this forest is going to stay a forest, this wetland's going to stay a wetland, is so difficult. It's not impossible, but it's that whole idea of, you know, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. The amount of effort and resources and time and money that has to be put in at the community level to even get some modifications to a plan, let alone stop it, is unreal. So if politicians aren't buying into the idea of preventative, proactive policy, what you're getting is like, well, we're just going to try to make the best of a really bad situation that didn't need to be there. And I think the other thing too about the highways and pipelines and induced demand is that the narrative is worn. It's something that changes, like it's a playbook that is done the same way all the time. That whole thing, you know, you ask for an inch and give them an inch and they ask for a foot. It starts off with, you know, commuters, backlog, you know, we've got traffic jams, therefore we need highways. Okay, so we have a rationale for why we need a highway, sort of, except that isn't actually true. A lot of times highways do not help actually with congestion. That being said, if you get an approval for a highway, then the next piece of the rationale comes, well, now that we've got people that are, you know, commuting, we should make it more of like a climate action where they don't have to, you know, drive to work. We could just set up work right beside the highway. And then now the people need houses. And it continues and goes on. Similar to when you get, you know, development applications that are way on the outskirts of a settlement boundary or on the outside of a settlement boundary. And then there's all this green space in between. Well, once you get the house on the housing project on the outskirts, then the stuff that's stuck in the middle becomes like, well, this is really not, you know, healthy anymore, or it just doesn't make sense. And now we got to fill in. So I think that people need to understand there is a methodology here. The leapfrog development, the idea of bringing a highway, you use a certain argument for one thing, and then you bring in the next argument, and successive governments, you know, will go, oh yeah, we need to do congestion. Great, highway. Oh, now we need homes. Okay, great. It goes back again to, if people stop looking at the responses as unique to a situation, and in fact, much more uniform narrative that is used by people that are looking for profit. I mean, it really isn't the things that developers are saying in my community are the same things that people are saying across the province, and the same things that the construction companies want to say about highways and the benefits of highways is the same thing that's happening everywhere. This is usual trope. This is really just exploiting the narrative to get to the profit, and any government that sees it otherwise is not paying attention.
Yeah.
I'd go further than you, Margaret, and not say it's just a lack of proactive policy, but a lack of policy, period. Right? Like, if we have a policy to aggressively respond to the climate crisis, we don't build highways. I mean, it's just that simple. Mm-hmm. And to have communities have to make that argument with each project on a project by project basis, basically that's how we do policy in Canada. We make policy arguments every time in a reactionary way, every time there's a project proposal, because there is no policy. There is no policy to prevent climate change. If there was, these decisions wouldn't even be on the table. The projects wouldn't even be up for consideration. We would just have a policy that we don't build new highways because we're trying to respond to climate change. Like, and so the way that we do things here and in many other countries, it's obviously not unique to Canada. It's astounding to me that sometimes I see the exact same arguments being made about things in Australia or, you know, very far-flung places. But it's a phobia of actually having policy that would constrain decision-making in any way or constrain mm-hmm. Private enterprise or capitalism in any way. I think it's even bigger than just not being proactive. It's there is no policy. Mm-hmm. We're in a policy vacuum.
Yeah, and we've seen that too when, I agree with you, Laura, and we've seen that too when we talk to municipalities here about extending greenbelt protections to some of their natural heritage areas to assure the constituencies that those places will be protected from aggregate new development applications, whatever. And there's a pretty common response, which is, yeah, but what if we need that forest? What if we need to expand our urban boundary? What if we need a new wastewater treatment plant? Which again, just evidences, like you say, the one it's putting it on the municipality when there really should be some higher level policy that's feeding into those decisions. But at the same time, I think that there's not many politicians that really do mean about preserving our green spaces and water when it comes down to it. Because if they're not willing to permanently protect something, if they're not willing to put in the policies to say, you know, climate is real, we're not going to be building highways. I mean, it really does, to your point, limit their decision making, and that's not what they want, even if that means that's at a public health expense, right? I mean, that's really what we're getting down to with the lack of climate change policy, lack of prudent spending regarding, you know, how we build our communities in a more equitable way. It really is coming down to, and people need to appreciate this, that not making that means that they're putting profitability over public health. There's no other. It's a dereliction of duty in a lot of ways.
Yeah, the profitability has to be qualified. We got to move on here pretty soon, but just to hit on that point, you know, what's happened is the narrow extraction, narrow short term extraction of profit, of wealth, of resources to a few people, really. And the result of doing it in the way that we're doing it is that we are ultimately degrading the potential for profit, if you will. I don't particularly like that term in this context, but for prosperity or you know, a quality of life in the future for us as a society collectively, for the public good, if you will, and for our children. And you know, part of that is also just to pick up on the death by a thousand cuts. You know, there's in resilience studies, you know, there's a lot of talk about regime shifts. And, you know, when the ability of an ecosystem, if you will, of an entity to continue to function or to be able to resume functioning in the way that it has is degraded to such a point that all of a sudden it shifts into a different state. And it isn't easily able to return to its previous function. That's a big problem. That's effectively a death, right? And when that is the systems that you rely on for, you know, life, which is what ecosystem services provide us, you know, water, fresh air, these sorts of things, food. That's a huge problem. That's what's happening with climate change. And that's also, it's really difficult to ascertain when those shifts might happen, when the changes are dispersed, spread out throughout a system, right? When a system is fragmented, and that death by a thousand cuts is exactly what's happening. That's why, you know, it's also so important when in ecology, people talk about linking ecosystems with corridors and sort of maintaining those linkages. That's kind of a crucial thing. I'm sort of losing the thread of my chain of thought there. Anyways, but we need to move on because we're going to run out of time real quick here. We're going to wrap this up in about 15 minutes. So there were a couple of issues specifically that you wanted to get into, Margaret.
Oh, did we lose your audio?
Sorry. Okay. No, it just, my phone was going off in the background, so I didn't really want to, okay. I didn't really want to answer because it was going to be just background noise. Yeah, there's a couple of things. I mean, I think as we're discussing the larger landscape, there's a local focus here. I mean, Laura lives in York Region, we're in Simcoe County, and whether or not there's political boundaries, there's ecological, there's not really an ecological boundary, right? We're all dependent on each other. And I think it's important that we bring some of this conversation down to what's happening here, because for whatever reason, you know, Simcoe County, York Region seems to be getting a lot of these kind of grand ideas about what future prosperity looks like. And two of those things is highways within the Oak Ridges Moraine and the Greenbelt, the 413 and the Bradford Bypass, which I heard Tim Grave, Environmental Defense Now, is calling it the Holland Marsh Expressway, to give people just an idea of like how silly that is. And then there's a lot of pipelines that bring, you know, water and wastewater servicing. And there's one that's planned to go from York Region into Lake Simcoe, which would dump the effluent into Lake Simcoe, which is not really doing great, let's be honest. And then there's other proposals. York Region wants to get more water from Lake Ontario for their growth. And so they're planning on building, or they would like to build a pipeline through the Greenbelt. And all of these things are, again, those death by a thousand cuts, but it shows just where political leaders are about how serious this climate crisis is and what is the thing that drives prosperity. And I think a lot of it is still that mindset that infrastructure and pavement equals prosperity. Anything else is just nice to have. So Laura is the lawyer at EcoJustice, and she's kind of been involved in these, both of these. So I wanted, if you could just, Laura, give maybe a 1 minute synopsis of the Upper York and the Bradford Bypass, just to let people know what's kind of at stake here.
I'll do my best to keep them to 1 minute, but I have a lot to say. I'm counsel for the Chippewas of Georgina Island First Nation on the Upper York Sewage Project, and they have been opposing that project for a long time. I think I need to give just a quick history of the situation regarding sewage on Lake Simcoe. So for the last two or three decades, York Region has looked at the issue of how they're going to service the massive amounts of growth that they forecast and plan for. And there's a lot of approved growth in Northern York Region that couldn't be built because there was not wastewater servicing for it. So I grew up just south of where the Bradford Bypass is, and now where the big pipe going to Lake Ontario and York Region is. And when I was a kid, I was told that all of the land across the street from my parents' rural property was going to be turned into a subdivision. And it's still not a subdivision. And the reason for that is that there was no wastewater servicing. So just to give you I'm almost 40 now. So for 40 years, it's been sitting there approved and not built. Because of the lack of wastewater servicing. So that can give you a sense of how important preventing the rapid expansion of wastewater servicing can be in stopping sprawl. And so that's one of the reasons that I spend a lot of time on sewer infrastructure. About 20 years ago, York Region looked at whether or not they would service that area from Lake Simcoe or Lake Ontario, and they made a very clear decision that they would service it from Lake Ontario. They then extended what's called the Big Pipe up into the Northern York Region. There was an EA which concluded that servicing from Lake Simcoe was not feasible. But lo and behold, not even 3 years after they had that EA approved, they now want another plant in addition to that pipe extension on Lake Simcoe, and that's the UISS. And so, you know, these projects can be kind of a bait and switch. Let's approve the Big Pipe extension and ask for a new sewage treatment plant on Lake Simcoe, even though both of our EAs make it seem like it's an either-or prospect. And it was interesting to see York Region going back to, it's kind of like, let's expand the Big Pipe thing again. I guarantee you they will want both approved. It's not either-or. It's never either-or. The growth pressure in that region is intense. So that's kind of a history of it. The plant itself would add 40 million liters per day of sewage to Lake Simcoe. It cannot meet the phosphorus limits in the Lake Simcoe Protection Plan. And so the proposal was to try and offset the additional phosphorus by improving stormwater in the region. The problem with that is that if we're to meet our Lake Simcoe protection targets, stormwater has to be upgraded anyway, in addition to sewage meeting its phosphorus caps. So this idea of trading off increases in sewage as against improvements to stormwater is it's a sprawl generating thing. And I believe that was on the table in the Midhurst development that you and I worked on way back when, Margaret. So they're all going to propose that, right? It doesn't matter what phosphorus limits are in place. They're all going to want to get around them with stormwater offsets. And we don't know if stormwater offsets actually work. So that's why we're involved in that project. We don't want to see stormwater offsets become a way to open the door to increases in sewage anywhere, just based on kind of a theoretical modeling that maybe stormwater can improve things. And we don't want to see the pile on of increased sewage pollute our lakes with phosphorus and cause all kinds of environmental problems from that.
Could you give some quick examples of what some of those problems might be for the listener who wouldn't know?
Phosphorus pollution causes the growth of plants, and plants use up oxygen, and then you have low oxygen in your lakes and rivers, and you have fish that die because they can't breathe. That's a simple way of describing it. You need to limit nutrients like nitrogen and phosphorus that encourage excessive plant growth in order to have a healthy lake ecosystem.
And phosphorus would be coming from?
It comes from sewage and agriculture primarily. It comes from urban stormwater runoff. It comes from unknown sources. A huge amount of phosphorus pollution is unaccounted for, and so we can't control it. It's assumed to be atmospheric deposition. So, for example, when a developer makes a big pile of dirt when they're building a new housing development, that dirt can blow in the air and end up in our lakes and rivers. That type of thing can cause phosphorus pollution as well. And the issue with phosphorus is not so much, you know, the relative contribution of each source, but which sources can we control and improve? And there are real limits to that. Sewage is one of the ones that we can control and improve. Stormwater, we have some ability to control and improve. But once you get into things like atmospheric and agriculture, it becomes much more challenging. So, there's a reason that we focus on some of the smaller contributors, because they're the ones that we actually have a prospect to control and improve the best.
Right. So I'm looking at the time here, and we're creeping up on 10:30. So we're going to have to move along quickly. Apologies for the truncated coverage.
We're going to have our part two.
All right.
Yeah.
Do you want me to talk about Bradford Bypass then?
Yes, please.
All right. So the Bradford Bypass is a zombie project. That's what I call projects that are approved and not approved and come back again to haunt you later. It's been around since the 80s as a proposal, ostensibly to relieve commuter traffic from anticipated sprawl in York Region and Simcoe County. As I just noted, much of that growth never materialized between the 80s and now because of wastewater servicing issues. And in the meantime, we've had the expansion of GO service through the region. We've had major upgrades to a number of regional roads. So it's not at all clear that the need assessments that were done in the late 80s and early 90s are still relevant to this highway. And they haven't been updated. The highway would go from the 404 extension to 400 highway just south of Lake Simcoe. We go through some of the best agricultural lands in the country. It would be built on areas that cross the Greenbelt, number of provincially significant wetlands, and other important areas. It would actually go right next to the UISS facility. if you look at maps, they're both in the map. The EA that was approved in 2002 predicted severe stormwater impacts. It predicted groundwater contamination. It raised serious engineering concerns about whether or not you can even build a highway in what used to be the bottom of a lake, the old Lake Algonquin, which has very sandy soils that are very difficult to build things on. And so now we have no demonstrated need. It goes through the Greenbelt. It would be challenging to build, and it would drag sprawl north into the South Lake Simcoe area, and along with USS would encourage the development of those white belt lands that are in that area. It would also encourage increase in sprawl in Bradford and out over to the 400 highway. So all of these things work together, right? The Bradford bypass was canceled by the province after they put in the growth plan in around 2005 as being sort of not compatible with the growth planning centers that the province had selected at that time. There was a big fight about that when it was canceled. It was a grossly unpopular highway in the 90s and 2000s. I mean, there were hundreds of people at public meetings opposing this thing, but people seem to have forgotten all of the bad things about it, including the tremendous destructive impact that it will have on groundwater and surface water. So, but not only that, it crosses a number of important archaeological sites in the basin of Old Lake Algonquin that would be destroyed. So I guess when I think about highways, I think about asking people the question, what kind of community do you want to live in? Do you want to live in a place that people drive through or a place that people want to live? And it mystifies me that anyone would want to live in a place that people drive through. And that's what that community would be.
And so building
for bypasses built.
Yeah. And infrastructure meant to serve a mode of transportation that is incredibly problematic. Fossil fuels and okay, fine, phase those out and get electric vehicles in here. There's still massive environmental issues with electric vehicles. We need to really rethink our relationship with the personal, everyone driving around in their own SUV or sedan or whatever. It's not a sustainable way forward. So why are we going to be plunging billions of dollars into this thing? What's the price tag, by the way? I've heard it.
No idea.
Okay.
That's not really when you have a 2-decade-old EA.
Oh, okay. Yeah, okay.
Estimates in that are going to be mean anything.
Right.
The EA, by the way, doesn't even acknowledge that climate change exists. There's no discussion of climate change or greenhouse gas emissions or indeed any other kind of air pollution from air traffic. Mm-hmm. And the proposed route for this thing goes right past River Drive Park in Holland Landing. So just so people understand what that means, there's lots of good environmental health research that living within 1 or 2 kilometers of a highway can cause permanent lung damage in children, that the noise impacts of the highway cause hypertension and stress. None of that was on the table in the CA. I don't even think there's a noise wall proposed for that community. And in fact, we had the same fight with the 404 extension. There was no proper noise study. There was no noise wall. And then after they built that, lo and behold, there were issues with noise and pollution for the adjacent residential communities. And they ended up having to build a very expensive noise wall after the fact. So the planning for these highways is appallingly bad. The EAs that the Ministry of Transportation does are the worst EAs you will ever read. They do not include basic information about the impacts of these projects. So if people think that somehow there's a process here, there isn't. And it's not bad enough that the CA was so poorly done, but they're now proposing to exempt it from the conditions of approval. So there will be no approval requiring them to even do the limited things they said they would do in the EA. They've exempted in Bill 197 all of the expropriation hearings. So we're really talking about ramming through a giant piece of, we're talking billions of dollars in infrastructure, permanently altering our land use with no real planning. I mean, and no one's going to convince me there was real planning for this of any kind. It's an old project that was poorly thought out in the beginning and is still even more poorly thought out with the passage of time.
Mm-hmm. I think too, one of the things I just want to mention while we're talking about highways is I want to kind of mention the GTA West 413 highway, which will cut through two urban river valleys in the Greenbelt. And it too is also looking at getting a reduced EA or environmental assessment for those of you that aren't familiar with the lingo. And in that case, the provinces, similar, it's another zombie project where the province had approved it, then canceled it. And the province's own transit study showed that it wasn't a good option for improving traffic and congestion. And two, that it would save at maximum 60 seconds of driver time. And the price tag for this, just to build it, by the way, is $6 billion. That's just to build it. So the last that I heard,
massive infrastructure projects always stay right on budget.
Oh yeah,
they never come under. No.
No, and so I think that Simcoe County Greenbelt Coalition is a part of a movement called Just Recovery Simcoe, and so some people, what that really is saying is, looking at these types of decisions, we're not asking you to spend new money. We're asking you, is the money that you're spending on the Bradford Bypass, on the Upper York Sewage Solution, ramming through expropriation of land, putting people's public health at risk, putting the ecological health of our communities at risk? You know, when you add those projects up, you're easily over $7 billion. Is that the way that we should be spending our money in the midst of a pandemic, in the midst of a climate crisis, in the midst of inequality? So, this is what we're asking for, is a reprioritization, because if there's not the policies, although there should be, like Laura said, then we owe it to our democracy to say, like, this is not how we want you to spend our money at ruining things, right? So I have that just little slide in there. And I think if people are listening to this and are kind of incensed or upset or ticked off or whatever you want to say, you need to get a hold of your MPP. For sure. And I would include also Caroline Mulrooney in this, because she is the Minister of Transportation. And let her know that this is not an okay way to plan our communities going forward. So that's my little rant, because sometimes we get so focused on what's wrong, we forget to tell people how can they help. So Laura, do you have anything to add to that?
And also contact your counselor and your regional counselor. They need to know this isn't popular. Yep. They're the ones that push for these things. in 413 yeah. Region Appeal has been aggressively pushing for this. Everyone just thinks highway job, trucking, yay. Like, it's very superficial. And so you need to let your local municipal officials know that you are opposed to these projects. Because if they're not hearing it from you, they're going to keep asking the province for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, agreed.
Well, this is, seems like something that we definitely would do justice to with a follow-up episode. And so maybe we'll plan that for the coming weeks. And but thank you very much for joining us, Laura. It was a great sort of dip our toes in the water of some of these things happening. And I'm sure there'll be lots coming in the next few weeks and months on these projects.
And I think in the show notes too, Adam, you'll probably include some links and things where people can learn a little bit more. And hopefully we can also, I know Georgina Island had a petition going at one point. So see if we can link to that as well to kind of support that. Mm-hmm. That would be good. So Laura's always easily, since I met her, is easily like the smartest person I know. Like, she just cuts right to the chase. So I thank you for your ability to just kind of lay it out on the line and put it in a way where people can really understand what's at stake here. Because it's not just a simple highway. There's a lot that's going on behind the scenes, and we need to reprioritize our government towards sustainable and healthy community development, not just more concrete and pavement everywhere.
Thanks for having me.
Okay. And we will, so visit us, visit our website, SimcoeCountyGreenbelt.ca. We'll have the show notes up there, and we will see you next time.